And in studio, we have John Turk joining us. And John is the guest speaker down at North House for the Winter's Gathering this year. He's also got a doctorate in chemistry. He's been an outdoor adventurer for a very prominent outdoor adventurer for many years and author. He has a new book out called The Raven's Gift. At his last visit here at the studio, we talked about his previous book, In the Wake of the Jomans, and this latest book has kind of evolved from that trip. He's also kind of something that I didn't know before this, but John co-authored the first environmental science textbook in the United States, which is pretty remarkable. John, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Oh, great to be here, Buck. Thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Now, I was surprised, as I just mentioned, you co-authoring a science textbook, environmental science textbook, but also to learn that most of your income over these years has come from writing textbooks.
Yeah, there's two sides of me. There's the textbook writer, and he's a patron of the arts, and he supports the other writer in me.
Okay, yeah, you got to get that. It brings that constant money in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But being a chemist and evolving into the type of outdoor adventurer that you've become and still are, it just seems, it doesn't seem like a natural move. Now, how did that all come about?
Oh, I don't know. You know, you want the short version or the long version. I got sucked into doing something that inherently wasn't genetically what I was interested in. And I woke up one morning and I said, yoo-hoo, this isn't who I am. This isn't what I wanted to be. I mean, I enjoyed being a chemist. But all of a sudden I looked and I said, do I want to be this person in 40 years? And I said, no, and I walked out the door.
That's a big move, and it takes a lot of, really a lot of guts to do something that dramatic. You know, all your friends have created expectations, probably yourself creating expectations in other people's minds, and then suddenly a left turn.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. You know, it's all in letting, you know, your ego tells you a story about who you are, and then maybe you listen to that story, maybe you don't. And if you don't listen to that story, then other doors open.
And they open for you because you opened them.
Yeah.
You moved in that direction. Now, when we were talking about In the Wake of the Jomans, it was a book about this, you know, a wonderful journey that you took along with another adventurer, going from northern Japan past the coast of Kamchatka, and Bering Straits and over to Alaska. It's just an unprecedented journey in most people's minds, but it's one that you put out there as the thought that early man may have moved to the Americas by sea rather than across a land bridge.
Yeah, I think the evidence is unequivocal. And that book came out 5 years ago. And since then, as more and more evidence comes out, it just supports what I said, that our early ancestors sailed across the Bering Straits. They didn't walk across. And the whole North America was glaciated. There's no way you could have walked across and then with your family, with your wives and kids, elders and pregnant mothers, walked across 2,000 or 3,000 miles of ice with no food to get to the end of the southern terminus of the glacier. That just didn't happen. So the people that did come came in boats.
Mm-hmm. And by sailboat to begin with, and then finally a kayak. You and what has become one of your great friends, a Russian named Misha, were able to succeed at that.
Yeah. And it's one of those funny things. When I set out, I was looking in the modern adventure literature, and I said, oh, nobody's done that before. This is a first. And then when I started looking into it, I said, no, this isn't a first at all. People came wandering out here wearing whale stomach parkas and dugout canoes 10,000 years ago in the middle of the ice ages.
Yeah, that's another way of thinking at it that makes a lot more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Out of that journey, which is just, as I mentioned, it's something that most people wouldn't even conceive of because it's such a huge trip. You stopped at a little village called Vyvanka. Actually, a storm blew you in there. And out of that kind of happening, a storm that wasn't indicated by any of the normal weather patterns you were looking at, came your new book, The Raven's Gift. What was that special about your stop in Vyvanka? As you said, it's so many time zones away from the closest paved road, very remote place. What was it about your stop there that made such a dramatic impact on you?
Yeah, well, we're paddling along, minding our own business, as you say, keeping track of the normal weather patterns, and this storm comes up out of nowhere, and we're just right by this village, so we pull into the village, like, okay, you know, storm out there, warm bread over here, and come in through the surf, and this woman walks down to the beach, and she's waiting for us. She's speaking in English, which is the first English I've heard in a long time, and she says, "Welcome. We're glad to see you. We were expecting you. The grandmother caused the storm to bring you to our village." And I'm going, woo, you know. You know, I grew up in suburban Connecticut. I went to Ivy League school. I went to high school with George W. Bush. I have a PhD in chemistry. This doesn't compute. And so what happens actually on the ground is I get this information. I store it away. I look out there, there's a big storm out there. I look over there, there's a warm house with a fire and bread baking. I say, great, I'm really glad that the grandmother caused this storm. We'd be happy to see her. Mm-hmm. And so the next day we go up river and we meet the grandmother. She was born during the reign of Tsar Nicholas II.
So she's really old.
She's really old. She remembers her father trading with Yankee gunrunners, buying Winchester rifles to fight the Bolsheviks in the Bolshevik Revolution. She's lived during the entire rise and fall of the Soviet Empire. So she says, she doesn't say much. I figure, you know, if she roiled up the heavens to bring us to the village, maybe she had something to say to me. And I was expecting some Carlos Castaneda, Don Juan type, you know, revelation. And there was no such thing, but on our way out, she grasps me by the elbow, and she says, "Come back. It will be good if you do." And to make a long story short, Misha and I both stopped everything in our lives, and we spent the next 5 years listening to that simple missive, that 5 or 6 word command, and or request, depending upon how you look at it. And that's the Raven's Gift came out of that.
And you had a physical problem that kind of led to wanting to go back beyond just wanting to see more of the shaman, woman shaman who was close to 100 years old.
Right. I had been busted up in an avalanche in British Columbia several years previously, and it was a very serious injury, life flight to the trauma center type injury. And I was bolted back together in a modern orthopedic surgery ward. And I was sort of better. On some days I could ski, and on bad days I'd get up and I would kind of roll out of bed and crawl to the bathroom to get to the bathroom because I couldn't stand up. So I went to Western doctors, and they took x-rays, and they went, we don't know what's going on. And so I decided to go to Siberia and see the grandmother. Now, you have to understand that I did not go to the grandmother to be healed. I had a camera. I had a possibility of selling a film. I thought I would go meet the grandmother, shoot a film about the reindeer people, and come home. And on my way out of town, I went to the orthopedic surgeon. He said, but, you know, maybe you shouldn't go. But at that point, I was committed in my mind, and I figured I'd kind of wing it somehow.
Mm-hmm. And this was a hip injury.
Yeah, pelvis.
So it affects just about every part of your body if so much happens from the hip.
Oh, yeah. If your pelvis goes out, your whole center of balance, your center of control, athletic control, functional control is gonzo, shot, boom, zip, zero, zilch.
Now, folks that you're dealing with out there, as you mentioned, they're reindeer people, and Mulinat, the name of the woman, and I'm probably not pronouncing that right, but shaman who you're visiting has grown up with a whole different perspective as all the reindeer people had. They had a lot less of the left brain working for them, as you talk in your book.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we evolved with two equal hemispheres, left and right. And the left brain has sort of taken over the castle, along with alphabet and taxes and armies and stuff like that. They all sort of came in at the same time and took over the show. But for the first 2.5 million years of human existence, all evidence indicates that we operated left and right brain more or less equally. And the left brain gives us our logical, linear, almost engineering type behavior. And the right brain opens it up to a more parallel universe. And when you're living outside, when you're living in an outside environment, you have to be opened. This linearity doesn't work because the outdoor environment is so complicated. And what I talk about in my talk, what I'll talk about Saturday night, is survival depends on opening up. In our society, people tell us that magic is okay after you get your work done. But in primitive societies, magic, which is right brain thinking, which is opening up, is survival. If you don't have that, you're going to die. So the magical world and the pragmatic world become one. And traveling among native people all over the world, I've come to that realization that we don't have to like stop having fun just because we want to stay alive. Just the opposite. Staying alive is the fun.
And it seemed to me as I read your book that a lot of this adventure in the Raven's Gift for you was no longer the physical part of it, but letting yourself hear what the shaman had to say, because her words are different.
Yeah. And, oh boy, I mean, that's the nature of the book. Yes, my first two books were physical adventure books. I was brave, clean, and reverent, and I got my merit badge at the end. And this book, incidentally, all my sponsors dropped me like a hot potato. What are you going to do? I'm going to talk to the old shaman woman. Okay, thank you very much. You know, call me when you get some other plan going. But anyway, so she heals me. I go out on the tundra, and a snow machine falls through thin ice, and I'm wrestling the snow machine out of the ice, and I slip on, you know, breaking through thin ice, and land kind of unevenly, and my pelvis goes kablooey, and I'm lying on the snow. I can't walk. And this is not good. You're in northeast Siberia, and you're lying on the snow, and you can't walk. And nobody seems particularly concerned, because they'll pull me into the village, and the grandmother will fix me. And yeah, okay. So anyway, we go through the healing, and the healing, you understand, is the beginning of the book, not the end of the book. And then the rest of the book is not really trying to understand it, because I'll never understand it, but trying to enter the Koryak mindset that allowed the healing to happen.
The trust involved for you to decide to let this happen was a big thing.
Oh, yeah, a life-changing thing. Where in one instant, here I am, she has me take off all my clothes, and I'm naked. I'm standing on one leg. I have one hand behind my back and one hand stretched out in front of me, and she says, I'll heal you. I'm going to go to the other world and heal you, but you have to believe. And, you know, my first impulse is I'm kind of on the spot. This is like a tough position to be in, and I can't lie to her. I know I can't lie to her. That's not going to work. So instantaneously, throughout my whole body, I opened myself up, and it was the most amazing thing, and it really happened. And I said to her, look, my mother never taught me to believe. I'm going to do the best I can, and that's all I can do. And she said, that's enough. And that instant really changed my life. I mean, I'm still doing all the things I used to do, but with a different background. There's a different something back there that says, whoa, this is more marvelous than I thought it was.
In 2005, kind of in the middle of this adventure, you had a tragic happening in your life, and that, of course, is the loss of your wife, Chris.
Right.
To an avalanche in California.
Right.
As anybody would in a tragic loss like that, an instantaneous loss, you struggled for a while, and it led you back to Kamchatka again.
Yeah. Yeah, I was definitely thrown for the loop. You know, you can say, okay, well, if I had this magical presence, why couldn't I have equanimously accepted this? But it doesn't work that way. I was totally cut adrift, and I was bouncing around and thinking I was making wise decisions for myself and just not. And then suddenly it struck me that if Moulinat had been able to heal me physically through the spirits, that's where I had to go back. And this is now the fifth chapter of The Raven's Gift, where I go, I have to touch her. And I knew that there was nothing physical she was going to do, but I knew that I had to touch that spirit of presence. I mean, some people will get it through a Tibetan monk. I was getting it through Moulinat,
the shaman in Vivanka, and
right
along the coast of Kamchatka.
That's right.
A long way from anybody. And a big trip to go.
Yeah, it's hard to get there. It takes varying amount of times depending upon the weather, but in normal conditions, it takes 10 days of hard travel by airplane to get there.
Yeah, and then, of course, dealing with the Russians, too.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't make anything any easier. But you made it, and once again, you found great comfort there and helping get beyond that pain again.
Yeah, and in the end, in The Raven's Gift, in this five-year journey, there were three great teachers. There's Moulinat, the shaman, whom we've talked about. There's Oleg, the hunter. And when I don't get it, it's very hard for me to make that spirit journey. And when I didn't get it, Oleg would come in, and at one point he said, John, you're a lousy traveler in the spirit world, but you're a really good traveler in the real world. And now here is the key thing, and the real world and the dream world are the same. So if you want to make your journey into the dream world, you have to do it on the tundra. And then with all that, the tundra becomes your teacher. And in the end of the book, Moulinat sends me out into the tundra, into the first blizzard of winter, Siberian winter, November, and lets the blizzard talk to me.
And I think much of, as I understand it, a lot of what you may be talking about is the loss of the old ways, the belief systems that used to allow man to get by on his right brain thinking, and all the things that we've lost over the course of time as we've progressed more technology.
Yeah, I mean, the technology makes airplanes fly and computers work and stuff like that. But I personally think we, as in humanity, is in a dangerous place right now. And we're in a dangerous place because we're going headlong towards acquiring more stuff and more technology, and not opening up to the whole picture, which is the whole right brain thing. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, ancient wisdoms won't help us make airplanes fly, but they'll help us survive into the 22nd century.
Mm-hmm. John Turk, his latest book is The Raven's Gift. You have your own website, I think, out there, John.
Yeah, it's pretty simple, www.johnturk, that's JONTURK.net.
And your book can be found, I guess, just about anywhere right now.
Oh, yeah. It's doing well, so it's in bookstores and online book sales and everywhere.
And they can order directly from you, too, on your website.
They can. They get autographed copies.
Great. John, we want to thank you so much for joining us here tonight.
Thanks, Buck. It's been a pleasure.